I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. In this episode of Web Friends, we'll have a chance to hear an interview with Berman Painter, who happens to be one of my favorite people in our community. And he's one of my favorite, mostly because of his excellent mustache. Before we jump into the interview, though, let me give you a little background on how I met Berman. So a few years ago, we both presented separately at Web Unleashed in Boston, and our sessions were in the same room, one right after the other. And although we had some differences and preferred preprocessors, we ended up giving very similar talks. So we hung out and chatted after the conference, and a few months later, Berman invited me to speak at the first BlendConf. Now, I'm very happy Berman agreed to be on Web Friends, and not just because he's a great speaker, designer, developer, and fun person to talk to, but mostly because he organized the best conference I've been a part of, and I give him full credit for that. Last year, the attendants were asked not to bring devices into sessions, so that means no phones, tablets, laptops. As an attendee, that felt a little bit weird. As a speaker, that seemed kind of awesome, and it turned out to be great for both sides. As an attendee, I paid more attention in sessions. I actually attended more sessions, and as a speaker, my audience was much more engaged, and I felt like I was able to connect with them better. Also, as a speaker, I wasn't given a topic, so I spoke on what I was passionate about, not just what was exciting or trendy at the time. So if I were to recommend only a single conference this year, it would be BlendConf. I am going, and I am not speaking. I am just excited to be a part of it. So now that you know a little bit about Berman and what he does, let's get to the interview right after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Media Temple. When you need to host WordPress, either for yourself or for your clients, you want something fast and reliable. Media Temple's new managed WordPress hosting comes with unlimited bandwidth, 3 WordPress installs, a one-click staging environment, automatic WordPress core and security updates, and their signature 24/7 support. Go to mediatemple.net, use the promo code GOODSTUFF, and get 25% off your first month. Web Friends is also sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Campaign Monitor also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013. Go to campaignmonitor.com and get started today. A huge thanks to our launch sponsors, Media Temple and Campaign Monitor, for supporting Good Stuff and Web Friends.
Berman, so first question. So who or what advice have you gotten as you've been working in the industry that has really stuck with you, that's been really influential in what you've done as a designer or developer?
You know, I spent a good bit of time thinking about that question. And I think for me, the most helpful advice that I've ever received was probably about 7 or 8 years ago. So I've been doing this for maybe 4 or 5 years, and was living in Utah, studying at BYU. And I think by that time I had spent maybe 5 years in college. Still had a couple years to go before I could get a degree. I spent a lot of time jumping around majors, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I was getting ready to leave Utah and move here to Charlotte. And my former boss, I guess current boss at the time that I was leaving, gave me the advice. He said, no matter what you do, get a degree. Get a 4-year degree. It doesn't matter if it's in basket weaving. And I thought that was the best and worst advice that I've ever received. Because I didn't follow it. I've always struggled with higher ed and the need to get a degree in technology. So I was studying computer science, jumped into graphic design, did information systems, poked around in psychology for a bit. And you know, at that point, you know, I already had a really good job. It was paying me pretty well. And I just didn't really have a need to get the degree. So when he said that to me, it kind of clicked that people still try and view college as a rite of passage. You have to go through it before you can be considered successful.
Yeah.
And I tend to be a little bit strong-willed. So if you tell me I have to do something, I typically won't do it. So it was really good advice that he gave me, because it helped me realize where my focus really needed to be. And I didn't want to, you know, spend a couple more years and a decent chunk of change getting a degree in a field that wouldn't necessarily matter or impact what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. And it's worked out pretty good so far. I can't really complain.
So the degrees you mentioned, though, it sounds like you were circling around like user experience.
I was really trying. I mean, I started out in print design, so graphic design was kind of my background. And I actually applied to the graphic design program at BYU, and they totally rejected me.
It's a competitive program.
Yeah, that's what I hear. So I was kind of bummed out, but I was still doing real live design stuff all the time, and was focusing more on the web by that time. And I went through probably a year and a half of computer science, and I was interested in web things.
Yeah.
And they were teaching things like assembly and C and Java, not even web-based Java.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a good fit.
And then you did information systems. I've heard some good things about that, but again, it's not necessarily web.
No, I did. And I was only there for a semester.
Okay.
Because it was extremely Windows focused.
Mm.
So they were talking about Access databases, and they taught you Word and Excel, which was fine, I guess, but not where I was interested in at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. So the idea that advice of go to college or get a 4-year degree, like, that was the catalyst for you, or was it like the straw that broke the camel's back type of thing on working on that degree?
It really kind of was. It helped me realize that most people don't really care. In our industry, most people don't really care if you have a degree or not.
Yeah.
There are a few companies maybe that care, but you're not learning how to do web design or UX or anything like that in college. At the time, you weren't. There are a handful of programs now doing a much better job. We have a handful of folks in our Cincinnati office that are going through a really nice UX program up in Cincinnati or Columbus. I'm impressed with the things that they bring back to our group.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that a lot of that is the age-old problem with technology and education, is that education has a very hard time keeping up with what's actually needed. Education has a hard time keeping up with the technology that's changing and the requirements it brings to the industry.
It really does. I mean, I've talked to a handful of folks that do curriculum here in Charlotte, and they're, best case scenario, it takes them, 4 or 5 years to implement a curriculum change, get the current students out of the program and get the new students in. And it's way too slow. And there are a handful of folks that are doing really nifty things in education that I'm really excited about. There are code schools popping up. Here regionally, we have the Iron Yard, which is based out of Greenville, doing some really great stuff. There are a handful out on the West Coast. Chicago and the Starter League have had something incredibly successful. Leslie Jensen Inman and Jared Spool's school up in Chattanooga has me really excited. My daughter's really excited to see that school come about. We're pushing her not to go to a 4-year, but go somewhere where it's going to teach her hard and soft skills, and something that's not going to force her to get $60,000, $100,000 in student loan debt.
Yeah. So what do you recommend for people? If you were to talk to past Berman while he was in the middle of figuring out what he wanted to do with his life, what would you have told yourself to do?
I think at the time I would have told myself to graduate sooner.
So you wish you had just stuck with something to finish, just to get.
It would have been nice to finish, because I still spent 5 years and a decent chunk of change, and don't have too much to show for it. So if I could go back in time before I could grow awesome mustaches, I would tell myself to buckle down, work less, and do school more. Now, if that version of me could travel forward in time, 10 years and then talk to myself, then I would make sure that I just didn't really start college and would have found something more worthwhile.
What would you look for? So you mentioned like a lot of people in the industry don't necessarily need to see the degree. What do you think people need to have prepared to get the sort of jobs that they want?
I think now, especially in Charlotte, for junior level talent, the companies are expecting you to come in and be able to do something. It doesn't have to be much. We need to be able to be somewhat competent in either doing design or user experience or development. And the challenge that we have here with the junior talent that we interview and try to hire is they really have little to no skill set. So it would take us a good 3 to 6 months to onboard them to be considered junior level for us. So it's a big expense on our end. And, you know, I feel bad for the folks that are graduating because they spend a lot of time and a lot of money getting degrees, expecting to get a job, and then they graduate and find out that it's not really that easy, that they didn't quite learn what the companies expect them to learn. So I think there's a big disconnect between what universities are teaching, the skill sets that students are graduating with, and then the expectations that companies expect them to have.
Yeah.
And I think that the code schools and things like Leslie School, online tools like Treehouse and Code Academy, all those groups, they're starting to fill in those gaps, specifically on the technology side. But there's still a lot of people going through 4 years and graduate with little prospects.
So what did you find to be useful, right? If you didn't find that actually having the degree was going to take you where you wanted, what were the things that you tried to have prepared to show that you did have those skills? Like, it's kind of the chicken and the egg problem, right? Like, you want to have a good job, but to have that good job, you have to have those skills. But sometimes it's hard to get those skills without doing stuff on the job.
You do. And I think that there's so many opportunities nowadays where you can do a lot outside of a job, and you can put up a crappy website. And, you know, in my case, I was born in Alabama, so there's not too much going on. I mean, it's an awesome state, but, you could easily put up a website, learn some basic, HTML, and WordPress stuff and just freelance it. You could freelance fairly easily without having to go to school or try and land a full-time job somewhere and, you know, kind of fake it. In my case, I started out building little websites for family members and people that I knew in Alabama. And that kind of gave me my start. Even before that, I started tinkering around because I joined a StarCraft and Diablo online gaming guild. They have a website. And this was back in the days of Dreamweavers and tables and just really, really crappy stuff. Image maps and JavaScript rollovers and all that really fun stuff that we don't do anymore. But that's how I picked it up, just because they had a guild and they had a site, and they let me tinker around with it. So it's, you know, some people have the drive to, and they can tinker and learn on their own. Some people need a rigid structured environment where the learning is outlined for them. For me, that doesn't work too well. Other folks, it works really well. I have a handful of friends that excel really well in a university or college atmosphere where they have a very specific set of things that they can learn, and they do an amazing job. It just wasn't a good fit for me.
Yeah, that's super interesting, and I think I can relate a lot to that. So it's funny that you mentioned going back and doing things project-based versus kind of that rigid structure of education in a university setting. I really like the idea of talking about, hey, go find some projects that you want to get done. I've been looking back personally on things that I've kind of self-taught and self-learned over the years, and it's usually when I've bitten off way more than I can chew and I suddenly have to teach myself something big to figure out how to accomplish a job that I said I could do, but I probably couldn't do at the time.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I've been there a couple of times.
Yeah. So again, let's go back to people who are coming out now. If they were starting out, you would recommend go do some HTML, go do some WordPress, talk to people. Are there any other skills that you think people should kind of be working on that maybe aren't intuitive or are something that seem to be lacking in junior level designers or developers?
Yeah, and I think it's really easy to pick up some of the hard skills. I mean, picking up HTML and CSS isn't that difficult. The information on programming pieces or programming languages, there's so much out there, and it makes it relatively easy to learn. Some of the softer skills, I think, like having apathy, facilitating, presenting. Things like that, they're much harder to learn. They're things that you have to learn by putting them into practice. A lot of the younger people come out and they're slightly entitled and they expect to be making 65, well, here in the Southeast, they expect to be making $65,000 to $75,000 a year out of college, and junior rates are 35 to 45 ish. Depending on what all you can do. So for folks that are coming out now, I mean, it's easy to pick up the hard skills. Picking up the soft skills, I'm not even really sure how you would teach those. That's something that you learn through painful experience sometimes.
Yeah, especially if you're freelancing and yeah, kind of doing the contract work by yourself, you learn what starts to work and what doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, if for somebody that wants to go that route, the one thing I would recommend, Mike Montero has a great book called Design is a Job, and that they recently released an audiobook for it, which I think is great. There's nothing better than having Mike Montero reading you his book in an audio format. So that's a great book because it's nice and short, and it helps fill the gaps. So it's kind of the you don't know what you don't know. So it gives you some of the basics of what you might not know about what it takes to freelance and talk to clients, making sure you're getting paid, making sure you're actually doing contracts so you're covered and the client's covered. So when something goes wrong, there's a defined set of steps that should happen for both you and the client that you're working for. So if somebody doesn't want to do the college route, and they don't quite have the skill set yet to jump into a junior position, then, read Mike's book, pick up some HTML, pick up some WordPress, learn some design principles, and try to go freelancing.
Okay, and then how do you hone some of those skills? I know that you're heavily involved in the community there in Charlotte. Do you advocate community work? Like, how has being involved in the community influenced your personal skill set?
It's kind of communal growth, I guess. So if being involved in your own local computer is important because it allows you to surround yourself with people from varying levels, and in most cases, people that are smarter than you are. So that allows you to realize where the gaps in your knowledge exist and things that you can do to move forward. And I've been here in Charlotte for about 7 or 8 years. When I first moved here, there was almost no community at all. So it's been really interesting to see our web community grow over the last 6 or 7 years and see just so many different kinds of people join in and become involved in the community. This year, for example, we were accepted as one of the Code for America cities. So we've had the Code Fellows out hanging out with us. We have our brigade. It's been interesting seeing people from all varying levels of technology, web, marketing, come out of the woodworks and join our Charlotte Brigade and be involved in our city to do civic-minded design and development work. The city's been really involved, which has been great to see. So it allows all kinds of people from various walks of life and skill sets to come together and work on things that benefit at a large level, sometimes the things that are going on at a political level within their communities. You don't have to wait for something like Code for America to do things like that. You can jump in. A lot of organizations have, or a lot of cities have, a lot of open data portals where you can get access to a lot of the data within the city and do really nifty things. Outside of that, meetup.com is a great resource to just find and connect with people. I don't even know how many meetups we have in Charlotte now. There's basically something going on almost every single night of the week relating to technology.
Yeah. I've talked about it on a previous episode when we talked to Mark Johnson, but I'm impressed when the community kind of builds things together like it has in Vegas. And what's encouraging to me, and it sounds like what's happened in Charlotte, is that it turns out you don't have to be in Silicon Valley. You don't have to be in New York or some of these other large tech hubs or design hubs to have a strong community and to find good jobs working with people that you actually like. Because they actually exist in these cities. And if the meetups don't exist, you can start them and people will start to come. People will start to show up. At least that's been my experience.
So. Yeah, same here. I mean, they're, it's just really interesting to see things grow. And if a meetup or something you're saying doesn't exist as a group in wherever you live, just start it up. Find a space, find a sponsor, and it's pretty easy to get something like that up and running. Recruiters love to sponsor things like this, and most companies are pretty open to donating space for some type of beneficial community event.
Yeah. Okay, so we've gone over education, we've gone over being involved in the community, improving your skill set, starting out doing contract work and getting those kind of starter skills. How did you get into presenting? And that might be involved, I guess, with the community work, but you are a talented presenter and you've presented at a lot of large conferences that have some really cool stuff that you've done. How did you get into it and how do you recommend other people starting with conference presentations?
Well, it started in, I think, 07. We used to have a web design meetup group here in Charlotte. It was the first group that I joined, and I didn't really know anybody in the area yet. I was new to Charlotte, was living here by myself, and I wanted to get to know the group. So I thought the best way to get to know the group was to present a topic. So I presented a topic on CSS three selectors. Which is kind of great because it was, my CSS skills weren't that good back then. So I spent, you know, a week or two digging through CSS2 and CSS3 and all the selectors and how they worked and doing examples and building this really nice presentation. It looks hideous now, but it was nice then. And they were nice enough to let me come out to speak. And after I did that, I realized it was really enjoyable being able to share ideas with people, get to know folks. And I can't remember if it's the first real-life conference I spoke at was Front-End Design Conf or Converge. I almost think it was Front-End, but don't hold me to that.
Yeah.
But
that
I noticed
that down in Florida, right?
Yeah, down in Tampa. So Dan Denny organizes, and I noticed that he had an empty speaker slot. And it was, I'm sure it was annoying. I'm sure he gets these all the time. But it was one of those annoying, hey, I'm so-and-so from Charlotte, and I noticed you had an empty speaker slot. I have a couple of topics or ideas. Would that be interesting to you? And by the way, if you let me speak, I'll totally grow a handlebar mustache for the conference. And you know, Dan's an incredible guy. He let me come down and speak. I spoke about preprocessors. I think I ended a little bit early. I'm sure it was horrible, but he was very kind and let me come down and do that. And the handlebar mustache stuck.
So that's the origin story of the famous mustache.
That's where it came from.
All right. So speak at conferences because you'll get fame, fortune, and a handlebar mustache.
Pretty much. I mean, it's conference speaking is really interesting because you speak at a handful of conferences yourself. But we're just people. But people have this weird mentality where if you speak at a conference, you're an expert. I'm not really quite sure why that is. I mean, there are a lot of folks that speak at conferences and do a fantastic job. But, anybody can really do it. It just takes time and preparation, like any other skill set. In my job, for example, we do a lot of presenting with clients, and it's important to be able to take design concepts or development concepts and abstract those out into a level that you can share with people that may or may not be technical. Presenting is a really good skill to hone, whether you speak at conferences or not. And again, it comes back to community meetups. If it's something you're wanting to get into, just reach out to a meetup group and go, hey, I have this idea. Can I speak sometime?
Yeah. And I've actually found, and this worked out well with BlendConf last year, I presented to the local group first, and they really helped me kind of sharpen the presentation. It really honed it down to exactly what it should have been. And when I presented at BlendConf, it was so much better for having done that. And that was because I was tight with the community here, and they were completely open and honest when they're like, that's lame, or that doesn't make any sense. You need to kind of flesh that out a little bit better. Like it was nice to kind of be involved in the community that way.
It really is. I mean, it's the internet, I think, makes people, it turns some people into jerks sometimes. But when you're doing things face to face, some of the feedback, I think, is a bit more genuine. In your case, if you get to present something like this to a meetup group, you get more honest feedback. If you did something online, I think you get a lot of trolls, but yeah. That's not online.
Or you don't get anything at all. That's actually very common online. You either get a lot of people trolling or you get complete silence. And I found that with open source projects, it'll be, months down the road where someone will be like, hey, I really like what you did here and I'm actually using it, but they'll never tell you online. So there's something about being in person that actually helps some of that. So I mentioned BlendConf. BlendConf is going strong again this year. We're doing it this fall, right?
Yeah, we're doing it again this fall. It'll be in, again, at the Sheridan, September 11th through 13th. We've added on one more track, so we have four tracks this year. One that focuses on user experience, another one on design, another on front end, another on back end. So it's 2 days and then 1 day of workshops. And the focus is really getting people to connect, get people out of silos, out of their comfort zone. Our Saturday event is our Blend Day. So we've asked all the speakers to present at a basic level. And then we encourage people to go to opposite sessions. So if you're a designer, you would go to a development session and vice versa. We have a no device policy because we want people to have face-to-face conversations with each other. So we purposefully don't have Wi-Fi at the event and request that people don't even bring laptops. Keep your phone in your pocket or your bag or your purse, no tablets. If you're going to take notes, we actually partner with a really good local company up in Durham that do these really nice custom notebooks. So we have a custom notebook printer for everybody, some decent pens or pencils, so folks can take notes old school if they want to take notes. No Twitter stuff. I don't really care if folks tweet about the event. And we're tacking on a second part of the conference this year for a couple of days, targeting juniors and seniors in high school. So working out the details of that to try and provide the students some good stuff and then allow the teachers in our local school districts to come and attend the conference that are specifically teaching technology. So if you're tricky, you can actually look on the lanyard and get a sneak peek at our speakers so far. We'll have about 62 or so this year. So it's a really good lineup.
And so the website isn't updated. If you go look at blendconf.com, it'll still show last year, which is fine. There's still useful information if you want to know how it was last year. But go look at Lanyard. And you have tickets on sale as well?
Yeah, tickets are on sale. they've actually been on sale secretly for a while, but we haven't really pushed anything yet. But if you go to blinkconf.com, there are a couple links to the wrap-up, so you can get links to all the videos or some of the videos and presentations and notes and articles from last year. There are also links to the current ticket site where you could purchase tickets if you want to.
And I'll make sure to include all the URLs in the show notes. So you can go check that out at goodstuff.fm/webfriends/. This will be number 4. So it will be there.
Excellent. I'll give you a custom discount code. It'll just be good stuff. And it'll knock off the price a bit.
Sweet. All right. I will put that in there as well. So now even less reason not to go. I pre-ordered my ticket. It's the first time I had ever done this. I bought my ticket as soon as I left BlendConf for the next year. So I'm going. I will be there. And you should come hang out. It's going to be an excellent conference.
It's going to be so much fun.
Are you going to do the speaker dinner again?
We will do the speaker's dinner again. I'm going to have to find a new location. So last year we had a speaker's dinner at Fleming's.
Yeah.
For those that care. And it was super tasty. Lots of really tasty food. That they even went out and bought root beer. If you're not from the Southeast, it's insanely difficult to find any location or restaurant that sells root beer. So they were nice, went out and purchased about 12 or 18 bottles of root beer for us, which is really nice.
Virgil's.
For folks like Garth and I that really like root beer.
Yeah, yeah. It was Virgil's. It was good.
Oh, yeah. Really nice.
So you're gonna do it in a different location, though?
Yeah, we'll probably pick a different location with a bit of a view of the skyline. It should be a lot of fun. We actually do VIP-type tickets where you could tack that onto your typical conference pass, and that would get you into the speaker's dinner and the green room, so you can hang out and chat with some of the speakers outside of sessions.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun last year, and it was a nice chance to get to know the other speakers. And what I found also interesting about BlendConf is I felt like there were more speakers in sessions than at other conferences. Like, it might have been the no device thing, I don't know, but it definitely drew more people into the sessions. At some conference I've been to, speakers will come, they'll present, and then they're busy and they're off doing something, and you don't always see them as much. But yeah, at BlendConf last year, they were all around and they were in the sessions. It was a lot of fun. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. I really appreciate, Berman, you taking the time to come and chat with us. And I really look forward to BlendConf this year. If anyone else has a chance, you should come. It's worth the trip out. So thanks, Berman.
No, rock on. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the episode. In our house, we have a rule about new foods. You have to try something 3 times before deciding whether you like it or not. And the idea is that sometimes it's hard to decide whether we like something if we barely do it once. Or we change moods before we try it the next time. Or maybe we'll try a food that's prepared better the second time than it was the first time. It's also a great rule to apply to other things too. For example, this is the 4th episode of Web Friends, and I've decided I thoroughly enjoy doing the show, and I'm going to keep doing it. It also applies to trying new things professionally. Maybe you want to try presenting at conferences, or put together some video tutorials, or blog more, or you want to write a book. Maybe you just want to learn a new language, or a framework, or a design process. Whatever it is, don't just try it once. Do it a few times before you really make a decision. And if you haven't done anything new for a while, you really should. You might be missing out on something totally awesome, like avocados. So that wraps up episode 4, and it's time for some thank yous. Thanks to Berman Painter for being on the show. Thanks to Good Stuff for helping us broadcast live and taking care of hosting. Thanks to Media Temple and Campaign Monitor for being sponsors. Thanks for iTunes for hosting this. If you haven't yet, go on iTunes and rate and review the show. We'd love to see what you say. And most of all, thanks to you for listening to the show. You are awesome.